Welcome to the Week in Review, a conversation amongst the staff of ABC Gippsland on a Friday, looking back on the week that was in the state's southeast. A small but select crew joining me in the Cadellodrome today. Celine Fernanda. Hello, Celine.
Hello. I would like a theme song.
Well, I do put music under this.
Oh, do you? So you can't clash with the theme song.
No, it would be difficult. But anyway, thank you for your contribution thus far. And Mark DeBono, looking resplendent in yellow, by the way, as you have been all week, cycling into work because the South Gippsland Highway's been closed.
It's a bad case of jaundice.
We'll get you some vitamin C or something. Where should we start? You cycling into work. Let's start with that, because the reason you've been doing that is because...
celebrate Cadell Evans' victory.
The South Gippsland Highway has been shut because of the floods. It's amazing how a minor to moderate flood can have such a disruption on a relatively small part of the world. Because of the Esso plant, I mean, not so much for you, but the Esso plant and the diversion around Rosedale and so on.
Always interests me, having been here a few years now, that you talk to some new emergency service people around the place and you ask them, is the highway going to flood it? And between Sale and Longford? And they say, no, because we've got a minor flood.
Warning.
And the level of the river's going down upstream. What they don't understand, upstream is a long way away from Sale, the water level's going down. But what they don't understand is the Thompson River might be at minor
him.
Flood level.
You asked him.
I'm not laughing at him, I'm laughing with him.
The Thompson River and the Latrobe and the Macalester, all their catchments are full. They reach Sale, and there's basically three rivers all chock-a-block heading for Sale. And inevitably, the river will rise and the South Gippsland Highway will close. If you get minor floods in those three rivers simultaneously,
game on. It's like Bangladesh.
And even...
How?
Well, it's like a delta.
Do you call it a trident?
Ooh. No, you wouldn't.
What's that?
Well, it's not really... I mean, the three of them don't join up in the same spot.
Okay,
the Macalester comes into the Thompson around about Maffra, and then it swells the Thompson. So if you've got the Thompson at a minor flood level somewhere upstream of that, and then you've got the Macalester coming in, you get an increased flow, and then they join near the Port of Sale, just down the canal from the point of the Port of Sale. The Latrobe. And so what that does too is it holds up the Latrobe River, all that high river down there at the junction, stops the water flowing down as quickly. So it actually lengthens the duration of the flood as well.
It's slow and sustained.
Yeah, it's usually a few days. Yeah, my experience.
Really?
Mm.
Well, how early did you have to wake up to come into work then?
4 o'clock.
Which is an hour earlier than you normally wake up.
Yeah, just to get organised and... Yeah, get things together.
Oh, that's terrible.
And if anybody is out there and saying, yeah, but the road was closed and you're not allowed to use the road, I've been using that road for 17 years and I went through the night before and checked it all out, followed the white line, made sure that the white line was visible all the way through.
I'm not sure you confessing to breaking the law on a podcast is such a smart idea. I know we don't have many people downloading this, but, all it takes is
lock
one.
Me up and take me away.
Oh, there's
he's
an idea.
He's a lawbreaker.
We had
he's,
a date.
He's I like didn't... James Dean, isn't he? He's a rebel without a cause.
No, not a rebel. As you know, I'm not a great risk taker.
No, he's not, folks.
It was a methodical, very methodical, well thought out, well planned process.
But this perhaps highlights the work that's going on there, and I think is abandoned at the moment because of the idea of floodproofing this road, and it will make an enormous difference. You spoke to Patricia Liu, I don't know whether
Many
you did,
times.
From Vic Roads this week about the... it's been an incredibly wet building site out there for quite some time.
They couldn't have picked a worse year to start building it. It's been wet since the start of the year. They've always been, working in mud, basically. In particular, the part near the wetlands on the left-hand side of the road heading out towards Longford. There's a whole area there that they've had to put down quite large stone, and they've put membranes over the top of it to hold it all together and more large stone. It started off when they started laying the gas pipeline, the new gas pipeline out there, because they had to replace that. And they've been working up to their, up to their kneecaps in mud most of that time. And I suppose that they'd planned for that. And it just shows what a difficult environment it is to build. They're actually building a bridge on that side of the road. They're putting in the piles now. So, it is an amazing engineering feat.
Engineers are clever people.
And it has been a fascinating process to watch all the work that's going on down there.
It's still a couple of years away, isn't it?
It is. That's the, yeah. That's the scary
it's all,
thing.
It's all of this year, all of next year, 2013 it will open.
Mm. That's assuming that we don't have more East Coast lows.
Which we will. We'll have another one or two between now and then.
Hopefully. Touch wood.
We'll wait and see. Yeah, exactly. They've been pretty good floods, haven't they?
Really? They've been terrific floods.
Just to wind up on this.
And I know all the people down in South and West Gippsland are going to curse me on this one, but they have been terrific floods for Central and East Gippsland. East Gippsland, people up there haven't had their dams full for years. Mm. And this is really, there's enough water to have run off, and it's been fantastic.
And we've heard today that, for instance, the Blue Rock Dam is overflowing for the first time in 15 years.
First time in 15 years.
I drove down to Leongatha yesterday. The place is as green as the Republic of Ireland. It's incredible, but very, very wet, you can tell. Yeah. So once spring comes around and the warm conditions go, it's going to go kaboom in terms of grass growth.
I was up at Omeo on the last weekend, and it's green up there, but there's not much depth in the grass, believe it or not. They had 30 millimetres of rain.
It's too cold to grow.
Yeah, it's too cold to grow, but I don't think they had enormous amounts of rain either. I think they had 30 mils maximum, so they could still do with. I think they could still do with more rain. I'd be interested to hear from those people up there.
I'll make a note and see what I can do.
Mm.
We talked about roads, we talked about floods. Let's talk about trucks in the middle of towns and when it all doesn't quite go according to plan. Yeah. Currumburra.
Yeah, DeBones, tell us what happened there.
So, well, we heard a bit of a crackle on the radio on, I think it was Thursday morning, yesterday morning.
Wednesday.
Wednesday morning.
Wednesday morning.
Was two, sorry. Wednesday morning, and a truck came through the top of Currumburra, the high side of Currumburra Main Street. There's an S-bend that goes into town. Missed the S-bend, rolled the truck, and it wasn't just a truck. That's the thing. We rang up the police, and they said, well, this story has got it all. We've got a B-double truck, which is one of those monster two-trailer jobs. It's full of fuel. It's a tanker full of fuel. Cleaned up the corner of the pub, brought down a power line. The power line was over the top of the truck and on the road, live, and across the road from a primary school at about 8 o'clock in the morning. And it just, it was a disaster waiting to happen. The next update was that it was a diesel tanker, not a petrol tanker. Collective sigh of relief, because diesel is a lot less volatile, a lot less prone to explosion. But, still problems there. And at first we heard that about 1,000 litres of fuel had gone into the drainage system, it leaked into the drainage system, which the stormwater drains go into local creeks, and diesel is quite a pollutant chemical. Anybody knows who's worked with diesel, if you put it on a piece of wood, it'll soak through the wood in no time flat. It just sort of creeps.
It's full of oil, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's a very, very thin oil, so it travels really quickly. It gets into everything. Once you get it in your clothes, you'll never get it out, and in the water supply, it sucks up all the oxygen or kills the oxygen in the water and affects the wildlife, and it will affect the vegetation along the riversides and all sorts of things. We thought it was 1,000 litres. It turns out it was about 5,000 litres, in the end, so there's quite a bit. 42,000 litres of fuel in those tankers. That's over 40 tonnes of diesel. Mm. So it's a massive amount of diesel. And then they had to go through that process. It was on its side. They had to go through the process of decanting that diesel, getting it out and putting it into another truck. So they had to actually drill holes in the side of the tank to get that. Yeah, because what happens in those big tankers, they put walls inside the tanks, baffles. So you don't have the whole thing sloshing around. Yeah, exactly.
It'd be a nightmare. More than the one we already have.
Yeah, so they had to empty each section one by one, which is just an amazing process in itself. So they had to drill holes, decant it out. And then they had to somehow shore up the corner of the pub, because it had taken out one of the supports for the, not the veranda, the balcony.
Yeah.
So they have to check that structurally now and make decisions about that. And it also had taken out the concrete power pole. They had to get...
Driver was safe?
Mm.
The driver was, it wasn't fine. Yeah. He had minor injuries, taken to hospital, checked out for minor injuries.
Salim, is there any conversation about how much longer that town is going to have to experience big trucks running through? Because God forbid that this could have been a different type of fuel and the power could have hit it, and then who knows, it would have been the disaster. I was teasing you on Wednesday morning, this sounds like a Steve McQueen movie, you know, The Towering Inferno. It will be a Steve McQueen movie in a few years' time, because it will be a disaster.
Well, I spoke to the owner of the pub, who's also the president of the Currumburra Business Association, and he said it had been discussed from time to time. He thought that if any corner of his pub was going to be taken out, it was going to be the other corner, because he said it, the way that his pub is situated, he thought it would be the other side that would be hit. But he said it's quite often that vehicles will come down there at high speed and it is difficult to negotiate. But he described it as a double-edged sword. While, you know, all that trucks are going through, it's also bringing business into a small town like Currumburra, which is probably a satellite. We wouldn't really call it a satellite town of Leongatha, but a lot of the big agencies and offices and shops are in Leongatha. So that town doesn't want to keep losing trade
when a town's bypassed. They shrink, if not die. I mean, it's happened all over the state.
But my experience, my thinking was that actually I thought there'd been surveys and studies done to suggest the contrary to that.
Well, I would suggest those surveys and studies are wrong. Yeah. Have a look at what's happened to Morwell. I mean, that's the typical town. You have a look at places like Kyneton, Woodend.
Maybe, I wonder how Pakenham's going.
Who knows?
But they've got such a
big population.
They've got a big population to sustain that.
Yeah. Well, Morwell is a good example, perhaps, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, the Woodends and the Kyneton's on the other side of the state. Once the Calder Highway diverted around those towns sort of shrunk down. You know, they didn't have that highway traffic to where people stop and buy a pie or a sandwich or petrol or whatever. Yeah. It's hard to imagine that they would benefit.
It's not necessarily on the radar for the business association.
Well, it has
for
been. It is something that he says just keeps coming up. Mm. Then they're unsure whether that particular part of the road can be fixed in any way, adjusted in any way to make it a little bit safer. But he said it's certainly something that they will be exploring again.
Any long term damage to creeks and waterways and stuff? Because you mentioned, Mark, it's a desperately polluting substance, diesel.
Well, there seemed to be a lot of concern about it. The EPA were very concerned about it. They were putting in sort of little dams, and they put those sort of floating foam things, but I don't know whether that will contain diesel. I think it could contain oil, heavy oil like crude oil in there, but diesel will work its way through the water quite quickly, I think. So I assume that there will be some reasonably serious damage down there.
All right, we'll follow that up next week, perhaps. Wonthaggi. The future of Wonthaggi. Life after the desal.
Yeah, because the desalination project will finish next year, and slowly, slowly, the workforce will be whittled down or wound back. And there's currently, you know, a couple of thousand workers there, and they'll end up with something like 100 or so in the initial stages of the project. So the business community, to its credit, got together and thought, well, we're not going to wait till it's finished. Let's discuss the options now and let's see what our town can do, how it can sustain and grow after the desalination plant. They said that Michael Giles from the Business Association at Wonthaggi was saying that there had been modest benefits from having that project there. Modest being
Are there some inconsistencies there, though? We've heard from council that it's been a huge economic benefit.
He said modest benefits, but I think he was weighing that up against the economic losses of workers who have left businesses to go and get the big wages offered at the desal plant, and those businesses haven't been able to get new workers, and some have folded or have had to wind back their activities. So when he said modest, I guess if those were still in existence, it would have been a bigger boom. But
it's been interesting to see, because I mean it's even had a ripple effect right through to Sale, to here in Sale. We've got concrete construction companies here in Sale, truck drivers who drive down most days of the week down to Wonthaggi, taking big loads down there and returning big loads, and they've actually geared up their businesses. They've spent money gearing up to produce the requirements of the Wonthaggi plant. So what happens to that extra capacity too, that extra industrial capacity? And if we see that here at Sale, it must be a lot more intense down at Wonthaggi, yeah.
Mm.
So have they got any plans as to life after the desal?
Well, that's what they would like. They would like some assistance planning done now, a strategy done now, because there's a sort of 12 months to go. Not necessarily money or a package, but really just a strategy so that the business community and industries there have some direction, you know, where to, where are we going from here? And he said, you know, at the moment there's a lot of balls up in the air that will require government support, education precinct, the hospital funding. He said there's a lot of projects going on within the community, but there's no clear direction that addresses this issue of what happens when the D-cell is built and all that money, all those people leave town and take their money with them.
But surely it would just go back to something like what it used to be before. Well, does it need a strategy?
I don't think they want to go back to where they are before. They've had a little modest push forward and they want to keep pushing forward now. So they don't necessarily want to say, well, let's go back to life as it was 2 years ago. They want to try and use this as a platform for which they can continue to grow.
Mm.
And speaking to the mayor the next day, this is kind of a
name dropping.
Well, yes, Veronica Dowman, the mayor. And while she didn't have any sort of short-term solutions or something to address this issue specifically, she said council was looking at attracting, what did she call them, global, see, I can't even remember the name now, global service workers or something like that.
Is that a call centre?
Well, no.
What is it?
They're folk.
Global knowledge workers.
Global knowledge workers.
That was
workers.
It. I was racking my brain there for
Thank
myself.
Thank you, Divine. Thanks.
Still that global knowledge. I've
They're
got.
Folk that don't necessarily need to work in a capital city but offer goods and services. So really, they can base themselves anywhere because all they need is their laptop. They could work from home if they had to.
That'd be another word for consultants or online
consultants,
sellers.
Consultants, online sellers, all those kind of things. People that don't necessarily have to be sitting there, that they could offer them the beautiful landscape, the lifestyle, the beach.
And piggybacking on the NBN, no doubt.
Yes, and this will depend on the NBN.
Absolutely reliant on the NBN, yeah, not
absolutely.
Just piggybacking.
But they're saying that they're working towards that being a new sector there, that they say come to the Bass Coast.
This same idea has been going for 20 years, I'd say, since computers were invented, that people would eventually move out of their offices, office spaces, and work from home.
And be working from home. It's right up there with the paperless office.
Now, there are, you know, I know of the odd case, you know, down at the West Coast in Victoria, and I'm sure there are down on the East Coast in Gippsland, there are, you know, people down there, but not enough to say, all right, we can base our economy on it.
Mm.
And the other thing, you keep going with this story. You spoke to the mayor. Tell us how she's going to get those people there.
One of the pushes that Bass Coast Shire has put forward because of the desalination plant, they have gone to the government and said, well, you know, we took this on. We've accepted this project into our community. Now there's an opportunity.
Didn't have much choice, though, did they?
No.
Let's be honest.
But as a result of that, here's something you can do for us. We would really like an arts and cultural precinct. So they've made inquiries of the government, and the mayor suggested a link between the arts and cultural precinct and the global knowledge workers, saying that that's the kind of attraction that these people want. They're sort of people that like arts, they like culture, they like good schools. So there's work being undertaken in the Bass Coast for an education precinct, and it's those facilities that they will look at to come there and base themselves there. Mr. De Bono is not convinced.
No, I'm not.
No,
not.
For
a number of reasons.
When I said that, he poo-pooed it loudly.
Yeah, I did. I must admit, I'm not hugely knowledgeable on this. I'm just imagining a structural engineer who can work from home, thinking to himself, I'll go and set up my business down there because they've got an arts centre, because I can go and see.
Well, would you weigh that up?
No.
If you were moving elsewhere,
would not be on the
horizon. What would you look for, a velodrome?
Absolutely. A beach. A lovely beach.
I'd look for the beach.
But people move all around the world for the lifestyle.
Now, the education.
The education, lifestyle,
absolutely.
Sort of stuff.
No argument with the education. That is the one big draw card. If we're ever going to get professionals out of Melbourne, like this is like professional doctors and all the medical people, the engineers, all those sorts of people, they are aspirational people. They want their children to end up in a better position than they're in, and they won't do that without good primary, secondary, tertiary education facilities close to home. They won't abandon that, and that's the big reason why we can't attract professionals.
What about the arts?
It's secondary, very, very secondary. But again, I'm probably a little bit biased. I think culture develops art. Art develops from culture. Culture mm-hmm. doesn't develop from the art. If you start painting somewhere, people aren't going to flock to you. People are going to have a community, and art is going to develop from that community. Mm. It's, I think,
chicken and egg.
Yeah, I think this egg comes before that chicken. But that's, again, an opinion, and it's not an informed opinion either.
I think it's quite interesting.
Look, I think we might go ding ding. End of round six there this morning.
He's in full flight today.
He is in full flight, isn't he? He's had to work some long days this week. Yeah, I think he might be a bit tired.
He's got an opinion.
I just don't want to get the art community offside. I think having art centres around the place is just brilliant. Our ones in Sale here and the ones at Warrigal and places like that are just fantastic.
You're
going to
be on that
assets.
Blacklist.
They are fantastic.
And
assets.
The one they're going to build at Morwell will
but
just
I
be
don't
fantastic.
Think
that,
but don't, I don't, think,
oh, don't start that.
I don't think they attract people to the area.
Possibly not. We won't talk about the Vatican and its ruling on a local Catholic priest. We haven't got time to do that. But a quick word on Cadell Evans.
Yay. That's quick.
That is quick. Mark DiBona.
Fantastic. It was just a thrilling end to a very well-planned, and all those people say he won the Tour de France. In the last 3 days, that one person beat a team of two people who are among the best in the world. And people who do ride bikes know that it is incredibly difficult for one person to beat a team.
The Schlecks.
The Schleck brothers. Yeah, absolutely. And the Schleck brothers, they're brothers. They work together like hand and glove. They know how, when one of them's tired, the other one takes over. And Cadell beat him single-handed. That is really tough.
I think we should invade Luxembourg. I think we can take them. I do. I think we can take
Cadell's
them.
Already done it.
Now, quick question to both of you. You're both bike riders. Could you do that Tour de France course?
No.
Maybe not necessarily in the time allotted to the professionals. But
before I die.
But physically, no. Do you think that you could do that? I mean, I don't mean stop for 2 days in between legs.
I suppose.
But
yeah, the right bike.
I've done the equivalent of one leg of that, which is the Three Peaks bike ride. I did it at a leisurely pace, not racing, and I trained.
You trained for a year,
I'm still exhausted from it. So, and that was months ago. So it's not a hope in.
Yeah, okay. I'm
the proverbial.
I'm going to change my attitude. I'm going
to
go with
it. It'd be lovely to watch, though.
Oh yeah.
I think just all the countryside and
that's the beauty of the coverage, isn't it? It's a travelogue.
They do it so well, I think, in terms of sharing. If you're not into cycling, and sharing all the bits of France and whatever, it's good.
Lovely stuff. Mm. We'll wrap it there.
And we've got the Tour of Gippsland at the moment.
Yeah, that's right.
As well.
So stage five and six today, I think, and finishing over the weekend in Painesville on
Sunday. And that is a great little criterium. If you're ever going to see one, go to Painesville. Yeah. It's a nice tight course, finishes on the beach, very picturesque, beautiful.
I still think they should factor Raymond Island and the ferry into that. But anyway, that's
or the
my
bridge,
opinion.
Perhaps.
Oh, no.
Getting a bit cold between laps. That's the only problem.
Go.
Thank you very much. Catch you next week.
Cheerio.
Wow, that was a bloody saga.
It was all over the shop, wasn't it? You missed a chat today. You are? I can't shut him up. He's on drugs.
I'll stir him up, I reckon.